A senior voice in the Pacific has warned Australia that if it doesn't act on the region's climate change concerns, there may not be a sympathetic ear for Australia's concerns about China. Dame Meg Taylor is the Secretary General of the Pacific Islands Forum, and she's in Canberra for an annual conference on the state of the Pacific following last week's forum meeting in Nauru. She says she's encouraged that Australia supported a declaration last week in Nauru that climate change, which is driving sea level rise, is the single biggest security threat to the people of the region. But she says Australia's continuing pursuit of coal shows there's still a need for some serious conversations. When Dame Meg joined me earlier, we talked first about the difference between Australia and Pacific states on the goal for limiting global temperature rises.
The Pacific Island Forum, our member states, particularly the island states, want 1.5 degrees Celsius because they see this as imperative to the survival of the communities in the islands. Whilst Australia is still really pushing for coal extraction and exports and higher levels of CO2 emission. So I think that we just need to have some much more honest and thorough conversations about all this issue.
There is a mismatch there, in other words, isn't there? Australia is willing to sign a document but not willing to deliver in practice?
Well, we'll see how that all opens up over the next couple of months. I hope that the Australian government will see the importance of the climate issues as Pacific Island Forum countries see them. I think that we just can't... always continue to say that, well, this is our reality, this is your reality. If we're all part of the Pacific, then we're all in this together and we've got to help each other.
I mean, as you say, Australia did in the end sign up to the key words at the forum that climate change remains the single greatest threat to the people of the Pacific. Is that a sign of goodwill or is that perhaps an indication of the persuasiveness of Pacific leaders in that context?
Well, I think it's both.
And why do you think Australia is willing to fail its Pacific neighbours on this issue? As you say, it's an existential threat.
Well, I would hope that Australia is not willing to fail its neighbours. I mean, it's so engaged in many other aspects of our development that when something is so important to survival of the region, I think Australia, I think there are a lot of Australians that want to be part of it and to be very supportive. And the position of the government at the moment is that it's got its own domestic issues that it has to deal with. But I'm not going to give up on Australia. I certainly am not going to give up on Australia. I think that there are sound heads that will see the importance of why the issue that is paramount for the survival of people in the Pacific has to resonate with them.
And does that mean stopping coal mining in this country in its entirety, in your view?
Well, that's something that Australia has to seriously think about. What is it that's... it's not just Australia here. I mean, there's United States, which is withdrawn from the Paris Agreement. You've also got China. You've got other industrialised countries and India. You know, this is not just an isolated issue in the Pacific. It's the whole of the planet has to be involved.
Another issue that's at play between Australia and the Pacific is China's influence, and there's been a flurry of efforts to avert key Chinese investments in the region, in telecoms cables in particular. But will Pacific states take Australia's concerns about China seriously if Australia takes the Pacific's concerns about climate seriously? In other words, is there a quid pro quo to have here?
I think that the sovereign decisions that the Pacific leaders want to maintain, that they will make decisions about who they will befriend and who will be involved in the infrastructure development, will just continue. I think that if Australia's claim about Chinese investment and how detrimental it can be, I think that Australia has to also be listening to what Pacific leaders have to say about it. But if it turns a blind eye to the issue of climate impact, climate change, then I think it will be a difficult journey for all of us.
In your speech this morning in Canberra, you spoke of a new iteration of the idea of Oceania as an ocean continent not defined by what external powers think about the region, particularly the tendency to think of the Pacific as weak. Can the Pacific realistically operate as one powerful state, as you seem to suggest there?
Well, the narrative was actually the narrative that was adopted in the 2017 forum by the leaders. And it's a narrative that has been espoused by particularly the outgoing forum chair, that is the Prime Minister of Samoa, and now very much articulated by officials and scholars, that we've got to start looking at ourselves differently. And leaders of the Pacific also embracing this notion of a narrative of our identity, a narrative of our own strengths, rather than always giving this sentiment that's been articulated for us that we are just the smattering of islands in the Pacific and we're totally incapable of doing anything for ourselves. And if you look at what the resources of the Pacific are, then we've got to start using the influence that we have. If you look at votes at the UN, the Pacific controls almost 10% of the votes at the United Nations. That's why, on a regular basis, when countries want to get a seat on the Security Council, they come to talk to us at the Pacific Island Forum, but then they secretariat, but then they go and visit all the countries to make sure that they've secured those votes. If you look at the fish stock of the Pacific, it's valued at around $6 billion. We've got to start looking at the added value so to increase the economic returns for our countries so that we're much more independent and not depending so much on foreign aid. If you look at ecosystems, biodiversity beyond national jurisdictions, what does that mean? And do we know the value of that? So there is, we've got to start looking at both the political value and the economic value of the region and start looking at how we can use that for the opportunities, look at it as an opportunity to leverage the Pacific internationally.
The Pacific is not without its differences, though, across all of the states. It's ambitious to suggest that there can be a state-like unity, isn't it?
Well, I never said it would be a state-like unity. There are areas of regional issues where the collective will and should come together if they need to secure an ocean continent. And that's why the leaders have taken very seriously the demarcation of the maritime boundaries and making sure that all economic EEZs are finalised. Any other boundaries that we have that we need to resolve, that we do that. Out of the 47 boundaries that we have, 35 have already been resolved and entered into treaty between our states. The remainder, there'll be a determined focus to have that done. It's not unrealistic. Look, right back in the early days of the formation of the South Pacific Commission, in the 40s, there was an articulation about the seventh continent. And just because it's water doesn't mean that it doesn't have legal boundaries if we can secure them.
Dame Meg Taylor, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Dame Meg Taylor is the Secretary General of the Pacific Islands Forum.